Good evening. Thank you for coming to part two of our series on the lesser known characters of Megillas Rus. My name, for those who don't know who I am, is Nechama Price. I am the director of GPATS and a senior lecturer at Stern College and Yuatza Halacha. And I'm very excited to be learning with you tonight. I would like to discuss today a different character than we discussed last week. You know, if we take a step back, and we ask the question again, who is the star? Who is the, you know, main character of the Megillah? I think every person would say to me right away, obviously it is Rus, right? And some people call her Rut, some people call her Ruth, but I'm going to call her Rus, right? Rus, she does majority of the actions in the book. The Megillah is named after her. So clearly she's the star. If I asked you for the runner-up, you would probably tell me Boaz, the man who gave her food, the man who married her. And the two of them together become the great-grandparents of David HaMelech. So it makes sense. Those are our two stars. Now, it also makes sense that because there are two main characters, they each have what I like to call in Tanakh the contrast character. They each have the character in the text that is the opposite of them, which kind of brings out their personalities even more. So Rus, of course, her contrast is Orpah, and we're going to discuss Orpah next week at this time. We discuss the contrast character of Boaz, which is, of course, Elimelech, Mahlon, and Kilion. When Naomi, by contrast, Rus, who of course stays with Naomi, Orpah, who leaves. They're the opposites, right? Or Elimelech, Mahlon, and Kilion, who are not nice to the Jewish people, leave the Jewish people, don't feed the Jewish people. And of course, Boaz, who goes and feeds all the poor people. I would even say his contrast character is Ploni Almoni, who won't marry Rus, and of course, Boaz, who does. When you kind of divide up the entire Megillah, you see I got the, as we did last year, the chesed people on one side, the anti-chesed people on the other. And then you realize you missed a character. There's a character that doesn't fit into my chart. And of course, that's Naomi. So my question for today's shiur is, what is the role of Naomi in this story? Is she a positive character? Is she a negative character? Is she a main character? Is she a side character? Who is Naomi? So my first question and the main question of the shiur is, what is the role of Naomi? What am I supposed to learn from her? But before I answer that, I'm going to ask a different question, which is a little off topic, but we'll relate back to our shiur, which is, did Naomi actually want Rus and Orpah to go home? Did she want them to go home or did she want them to stay? Now, we normally, when we learn the story of the Megillah, of course, she wanted them to stay. She's all alone. She has nobody left. Her husband died. Her sons died. I mean, she's got nothing. So, of course, she wants her daughter-in-laws to stay. She doesn't want to be all alone. And, of course, Chazal seems to go with this view as well. Source number one, everyone should have a source sheet. If not, it is attached on the chat, so you can just download it right now. Source number one, the Medrash in Rus Rabba says, why is the name Orpah? Why is her name Orpah? Shehachva uref lechamuta. She turned her neck on her mother-in-law. She turned her back on her mother-in-law. Why is her name Rus, the second one? Sheraata b'divrei chamuta. She knew what her mother-in-law really wanted. She did what her mother-in-law really wanted. She stayed. And that's the assumption we normally have when we read the Megillah. Really, Naomi wanted her daughter-in-laws to stay with her, but one stayed and one left, and Rus, of course, did the right thing. But then I don't know what just happened. Somebody's sharing screen, but I hope I can keep going. If there's an issue, somebody tell me. Dove? Okay, I'm going to keep going and hope that this is all okay. Thank you, whoever fixed that. Okay, if you look at the psukim, Naomi tells them five times to go home. Five times. That's a lot of times to tell someone to do something that you don't really want them to do. If you look at source two with me in Pasuk Chet, she says first, Lechna, Shovna Isha Lebetima, please each of you go home. And of course they all kiss and they cry and they're sad by the reality, but they both choose not to leave. Pasuk Yud, Aleph, but Tomanami Shovna Benotai, please, my daughters, Lama Telachne me, why are you coming with me? I have no more children to give you. Please go home. But then they don't listen. So she tries again. Pasuk Yibet, Shovna Benotai, Lechna Kisa Kantimilvish, please go home. I can't really, I'm too old to be with a man. And if I am, the child will be too young for you to marry. Please go home. That's attempt number three. Then she tries again. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Al Benotai, no, my daughters. Ki Marli Ma'od, I'm very bitter. God has left me. Please go home. finally, pasukid dalet, Orpah says, I'll listen to what you say. You asked me four times. So therefore, of course, Orpah cries and hugs and kisses, and she leaves. Pasuk tedvav, Naomi tries again. Listen, Ross, Orpah just left. Go with her. Hine shava yibam techalama. Come on. Orpah just went home to her nation, to her God. Shuvi achri yibam tech. Why don't you also go? It seems so strange that if Naomi wanted Ruth to stay, she would ask her so many times, over and over again, please go home, please go home. It reminds me a little bit of an interesting parallel, source number three, Moshe Rabbeinu. God comes to Moshe at the Sinai and asks Moshe to please lead the Jewish people. And over again, interestingly enough, five times, Moshe tries to say no. Source number three, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Mi Anochi Kelecha Parva Keotzi Et Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim, I can't go, Hashem. Who am I that I'm supposed to take the Jewish people out? Pasuk Yud Gimel, I don't want to do it. I'm really mashemo, marlehem. What am I going to say to the Jewish people? I don't have the right answers. I'm the wrong person. Perek Dalet Pasuk Aleph. Behein lo yaminu li, v'lo yishmu b'kali. They won't listen to me, God. I'm not a good choice. Pasuk Yud, lo ish devarim anochi. I don't speak well. Why are you choosing me? Finally, Pasuk Yud Gimel, shalach nabiyah tishlach. The truth really comes out. It's not about the excuses. Moshe saying, God, I really don't want to go. Then, of course, God is able to change his mind. But when someone says no over and over and over again, it's not about the excuses. It's not that I can't give you more children. It's not that I'm too old. What is it? It's that I don't want you to come. I don't want you to come with me. So if that's really true, right, what happens? Why does Naomi stop trying to get Ruth to come? Well, if you look at source four, it's very, very clear. Ruth turns to Naomi and says, source four, but Tomer Ruth, al tifki bi, stop bothering me. Stop telling me to leave. I'm not going to go. Al tifki lazvech, l'shuv me'acharayach. I'm not leaving. Ki ha'mavis yafrid b'nei b'neich. Nothing's going to separate us. Death is going to separate us. Pasuk yudchat, v'teiri ki mit'ametet hi l'alachet ita, v'tachta l'daber ima, l'daber aleha. She only stopped trying to convince Ruth. Why? Because she saw Ruth is not going to go. There's no point anymore. There's no point in trying to convince her. She's not going to go. And therefore, now you have to ask, if we look at the Megillah from this slightly different perspective, that she doesn't want Ruth to come with her. She's begging Ruth, please don't come. Please don't come. And Ruth is saying, too bad. I'm coming with you. We have to ask why. Why is it that Naomi doesn't want Ruth to come, right? Why would she want to be alone? Why would she want to return alone back to Israel? And I think the answer is really, really simple. How embarrassing is it to come with Ruth? Naomi left. There's no phones. There's no internet. There's no Facebook. Nobody knows where her family went. Nobody knows what happened to them. And here she's coming back, and she is going to present to them the story of what occurred. But she can't hide from her past, because here she's coming along with her daughter-in-law, who's a Moabite. And therefore, now it is clear, where did her family go? They went to the nation of Moab. And as we discussed last week, that could be the nation that we are fighting with right now, but it's certainly a nation we're not supposed to intermarry with, we're not supposed to associate with. Well, she can't deny that that's where her family went, because here she is with her daughter-in-law, who's a Moabite. Not only that, she can't deny that her sons intermarried into that nation. She can't come back with a sob story, because here she is dragging along with her, her daughter-in-law, who is the proof that is the most embarrassing storyline of what happened to her family. The transgressions of her family are so obvious to everyone. She can't sneak in innocently. There's no way to avoid everyone from finding out what her family did, what she did during the time she was away from Israel. And if you look at the psukim, her fears absolutely come true. When she returns with Ruth, pasuk yetan, I'm still in source four, vatehom koleir aleihem, they're all shocked. But Tomer Hazot Naomi. So the first way we normally read it was, oh, because she's so poor. So they're like so surprised. But realize it's not just that. This is Naomi with a Moabite daughter-in-law. Well, this is what your family became. This is where you went. They're shocked. And you know what? They never speak to her again for the rest of the Megillah until the very end, which we'll come back to. Nobody talks to Naomi. Not another word. Why? Pasachavet, Vatashav Naomi Verus Hamavia Kalasa Ima. Why? Because Naomi came with her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the Moabite, with her. The proof of what her family did was with her. So nobody speaks to Naomi. Nobody gives her food. Nobody invites her into her home. Nothing. Naomi is left poor, begging people for food, because no one will help her. None of the Jewish people will allow her back in. Why? because she came back with Rus. That is my argument as to why she really didn't want Rus to come. Rus is this leash that's kind of holding her back, where everybody now knows all the mistakes that her family made and the reason why the people can't forgive and forget Naomi for what her family has done. The proof of this version of the story is actually found very nicely in the Pesukim. If you look at source number 5, no one is nice to Rus. They look at her in such a terrible way. Nobody talks to Naomi, but even more so, people are mean to Rus to the extent, source number 5, when Boaz comes to speak to her, she turns to Boaz in shock. Madua matzichim be'inecha lahakirenu v'anochi nachria. Why are you talking to me? Why do you even notice me? I'm a foreigner. Nobody's talking to me. Nobody cares about me. Why do you care about me? And Boaz has to say to her, which is so insulting to some extent, don't worry, you can have food, you can take whatever food you want. Next, pasuk 10, halot tziviti et hanarim lebilti negaich. You know, I commanded my boys, don't touch you. Don't hurt you. Because the assumption here is everybody looks at her in this terrible way. Nobody will talk to her. He's nervous maybe someone will hurt her. Somebody will harm her. Rus is this person that represents to the Jewish people something so negative. And that way that they feel about Rus, they're now also attributing to Naomi as well. And we see this clearly in source number 6, because only after Boaz marries Rus and she becomes part of the Jewish nation, only then do we have the women speaking to Naomi again in Pasuk Yudalit. But Tomarna Hanashim Naomi Baruch Hashem, and on and on and on. How wonderful is Hashem? And they start to speak to Naomi again and allow Naomi back into the fold. Naomi is put in the corner just like Rus is put in the corner. And they're put there together because Rus represents everything negative that Naomi and her family did. And Naomi can't escape it because Rus is with her. Now, if everything I said is true, I really do understand why Naomi wouldn't want Rus to come with her. But based on now this background, I want to ask my first question again. What is Naomi's role in the story? Is she a main character? Is she a side character? What is the story of Naomi? Now, if I look at the Megillah really, really quickly, I'd be like, yeah, Naomi really has a tiny role. Rus goes with her back to Israel. But at that point, it's Rus who gets all the food. It's Rus who goes to Boaz's tent. It's Rus who marries Boaz. It's Rus who has the baby. Naomi is really this very side character. However, I would look at the Megillah again and see Naomi in a very different way. I actually think in the Megillah, Naomi is probably the main character. The entire story is about her story, her transition throughout of her life. She's the manipulator. She's the instructor. She's the mentor. She is pulling all the strings. Everything is the master plan of Naomi. So let us now look at the entire Megillah in a new way of viewing this really as the story of Naomi. And let me prove it to you. The Megillah begins not with Rus. The Megillah begins with a very strong focus on Naomi herself. I'm not going to read the Pesukim in source 7 again, as we read them last week, but it starts off, this is the time of the judges, it's a famine in the land. There's a man who leaves the land of Israel. And it tells us, Huvishto Shnei Banav. We hear about the mentioning of the wife, which is, of course, Naomi. Next Pasuk, Shema Ish Elimelech, Shemishto Naomi. We hear her name. Right from the start, we have to recognize that in Tanakh, a wife being mentioned by name is very significant. There's a lot of wives that seem to be significant, but we never hear their names. The wife of Noah, the wife of Yehuda in the story before he marries Tamar, the wife and mother of Shimshon, the wife of Boaz. I mean, I can go on and on. The women that are called the wife of this, and we never ever hear their names. Here she's given a name. She's clearly somebody of significance, but it's much more than that. We get to Pasuk Gimel and her husband dies, and then all of a sudden the focus shifts to her. Vayamat Elimelech Ish Naomi. When do you ever hear that in the text of the Torah? The husband of Naomi, right? It's always the wife of so-and-so. It's almost never the husband of the woman, right? The husband of Naomi dies, v'tishair hi u'shnei baneha, and she is left alone with her two sons. Pasuk hey, the sons die, and it does a nice review, focusing us on who's important. V'tishair ha'isha mishnei yaldeh me'isha, and she, the wife, now remains from her sons and from her husband. It's like a funny math problem. A kindergarten kid could do it, right? Oh, there are four. One dies, we're down to three. Two more die. We're down to one. Naomi is left. It's like, what does the Megillah need to tell me this? Because the Megillah is focusing me on who's important. Who do we care about? Who's left in our story? It's Naomi. And therefore, the rest of the Pesukim now makes sense. If I look at Pasuk Vav, which should be your next Pasuk, all the verbs are in feminine singular, even though they are referring to three women. Vatakam hi v'kalateha. She gets up. Who's it referring to? Naomi. She's our focus, even though she's with her two daughter-in-laws. Vatasha ki shama. She heard that there's now food. Vateitse. She goes from the place. By the way, shnei kalatalima. She has her two daughter-in-laws with her. Who's important? Naomi. Who's the main character? Naomi. Who's she dragging along with her? Her two daughter-in-laws. It reminds me of stories of Abraham that I gave you here in Source 8, the story of Lech Lecha, also the story in Parakeet Gimel when he leaves Mitzrayim. It's Vayal Abraham, it's in singular. Who's with him? Oh yeah, he's got his wife, Vilot Imo. Same language, and Lot is dragging along with him. To the extent Source 9, we even have it repeated later. Vatashav Naomi Virus HaMoav Yakalata Ima, singular. It's Naomi who returns and Ruth HaMoaviah is with her. This language of Avram and Lot, it's the same language of Naomi and Ruth. And of course, Ruth, as we know, coming from Moab. Moab is the grandson or the son. It's kind of weird. It's the son and grandson of Lot, right? Because he ends up having relations with his own daughter and has this child, Moab, connecting them together. But in both stories, our main character, Avraham and Naomi, are taking with them or along with them is coming Lot and Ruth in the story. And therefore, to that extent, we're already seeing within the language, we're focusing in on Naomi. And if I want to make this parallel between Naomi and Avram even stronger, the story of the beginning of Megillas Rus is clearly the Lech Lecha, the returning back to Israel of Naomi herself. She's doing tshuva for the action that was done in the past. It could be her leaving Eretz Yisrael. She was in agreement or not in agreement. Her husband made her leave. But now she is returning. She is the one who is fixing the mistake of the past. This is her story. She is the focus. And therefore, it makes sense that the verbs are in singular because this is really all about her. Because of Ruth, things become harder. She could have come back very respected, and she could have come back in a nicer way. Ruth makes her return harder, but the return of Naomi is the focus of the story. But it's not just that the beginning of the story is focused on Naomi. The ending of the story is focused on Naomi. Actually, the Megillah is bookend. We start with the story of Naomi. We end with the story of Naomi. The end of the Megillah is Naomi, who now has this child, right? The Yulad Ben LaNaomi. And now it's the coming back of the Naomi story. She now has a child to replace her two lost sons. It's a beautiful ending for Naomi. We start with her. We end with her. Why do we have bookends in the Torah? To focus us on who's the main character, and the story in the middle is supposed to be the transition of that character. How did we get from point A all the way to point B? The story in the middle. And therefore, the story really has to be the story of Naomi. And I think that if you look at the story from afar, we actually see this transition of Naomi. When we first begin, source number 10, she is somebody who recognizes God, right? From the beginning, Yas Hashem in God should do chesed with you. He should do kindness with you like he did with me and with my dad, meaning my husband and my sons. Then, of course, later she turns bitter. This is the transition of Naomi. Things go bad for her. Things are not good for her. Pasuk Yutet. They all, is this Naomi? Is this the person that we knew from before? Pasuk Chaf. Call me Mara. The life is bitter. God has made me bitter. I am empty. I had so much, and now God has made me empty. We see Naomi going at a very downward spiral of seeing that the bottom of the pit here for her. And then, of course, she lifts herself out. Pasuk, source number 11. She comes back at the end of the story to realization of God and focuses on the chesed of God once again. Baruch Hu Hashem, asher lo azav chasto et achayim v'et hametim. God, of course, who does chesed with the living and also with the dead. We see the change in Naomi. She goes back to the person that she was before. She acknowledges God. She acknowledges his chesed. And that's why the ending of the story is she kind of gets a lot of it back at the end. All the things that she lost, she gets a lot of it back. Source number 12, the women praise her once again. She is respected once again by the women. The women say, Baruch Hashem, and all these things wonderful about Naomi. They talk about her daughter-in-law being Tovalach, Mishiva Banim is better than seven sons. So it's like, Ke'ilu, like you had seven sons at this point. And of course, the famous ending, Yulad Ben LeNaomi. It's as if she has a child at the end. She names him, or they name him Oved, and of course that leads us to David. This is the story of losing everything and getting back so much at the end. And that reminds me of two other beautiful stories that we have in Tanakh that go this way. First of all, back to our parallel, Avraham who loses everything, test after test, he loses Lot, and then of course he has to separate from Ishmael, then he almost has to kill Yitzchak, and then he loses his wife Sarah. And then at the very, very end of all of his trials and tribulations, the ending is the positive getting of everything back. Source 13, Vashem Beirachat Avram Bakol. At the end of his life, he's blessed with everything. And of course, when he dies, before he dies, he gets remarried to Keturah. He has six more children at the end. And beautiful ending to his story, Pasachet. Vayamat Avram Beseva Tova Zakein Vesaveh. He dies at a very old age, satisfied with his life in a very, very beautiful way. Similar story to this is that of Eov. Eov goes through a transition this way. He's wealthy. He has everything. And then at some point, God takes it all away. Source 14, right? Kalelet Yomo, he curses the day, whatever that means. He goes on this downward spiral back and forth in the Prekim, philosophical debates back and forth. And then at the very end comes to the realization of God. Source 15 gets it all back. Hashem Beirach HaTacharit Iyob Merishito, paralleling the language of Avram, he gets even more back at the end than he had in the beginning. He gets 10 children back again. Pasuk Ted Zion, he lives such a long life. He sees four generations after him. Same language as Avraham. Vayamet Iov Zakein V'Sava Yamim, dies in a beautiful way, very satisfied with his life as well. These are the story where we start off with a main character. They go through a transition. And then the ending of the story is the happy ending that is for them, which is what we see in the story of Naomi. So I've now proven to you that the main part of the beginning of the Megillah is about Naomi. The main part of the end of the Megillah is about Naomi. But you're going to still say to me, Nechama, you're not right, because the entire middle of the Megillah, which is majority of the Megillah, is missing Naomi. So I want to show you that that is actually not true. The entire Megillah, Naomi is there in every single scene of the Megillah. She is orchestrating everything that is taking place throughout the entire Megillah. If you start off with me in source number 16, starting from the beginning, they return back into Eretz Yisrael. No one will give them food. No one will talk to them. They all treat them like dirt. And they now need a way to survive. Ruth volunteers to collect food. Now, if you look at the story in source 16, Ruth comes to Naomi and says, you know, you're a very dignified woman. You're an older woman. I want to help you. I want to take care of you. Emsachin Beinav, I want to find favor in your eyes, making it even sound like she feels bad. She feels guilty. Naomi's maybe blaming her for the situation that they're in. Please let me go pick food off the floor. Why does the story start the way it does? But Tomerla, because Naomi says, L'chibiti. Okay, you could go. Naomi tells her to go. Everything Ruth does is what Naomi tells her to do. She gives her permission. Then, of course, she goes to the field the first day. She gathers food. How does the story end? Pasuk Yichet. She comes home to her mother-in-law. I mean, these are details that if Naomi wasn't important, we wouldn't be hearing them. She sees everything that she's gathered. And of course, Naomi is given food as well. Then, of course, the next day she goes back out. And she meets up, Ruth meets up with Boaz. She comes back to her mother-in-law, source 17, Vatomer Lachamuta, where did you get all the food that you got today? Oh, I'll tell you where I went. Vatageid Lachamuta's Kola Sherasna Imo. She tells her mother-in-law the whole story. Back and forth, the entire Megillah, it's constantly Ruth returning to her mother-in-law to report back, and her mother-in-law giving her the instructions of what to do next. Pasal Chabet, Vatomer Namel Ruskalata, Tobiti, Kititi, Narotav, Velo Yifgeu Bachsad Besteacher. Great. Now that you've met this guy, Boaz, don't you dare go to any other field. Stay in this field. And of course, what does she do? Listens to her mother-in-law. Goes to the field of Boaz. What does she do at the end of the day? Next pasuk, Batesha Valchamuta. She comes back to her mother-in-law every night to report back to get her next set of instructions. After a while, of course, Naomi realizes nothing's going on, so source 18, she gives a new set of instructions to Ruth. But Tomer la Naomi Chamota, the mother-in-law, says to her daughter-in-law, you know what? Dress up. Pasuk Gimel, get washed up, get yourself all dressed up, go to his tent in the middle of the night, Ubata Vagalita Margalotav, and uncover his feet. This is Naomi's idea. Everything that Ruth does, she is directed, it's a little strange, by her mother-in-law of what to do with Boaz. It is all Naomi's plan. And it's actually clear that this is not on the fly that Naomi comes up with this. This is actually her plan from the start. Her plan was not, oh, let's just collect food and survive. Her plan was, let's collect food until we find the person who's going to marry you and reinstate our status back within the nation. I want my life back, Naomi says. So since you came with me and I couldn't get it back by myself, I'm going to let you help me to get my life back. And that is why in source 19, from the beginning, before we meet Boaz, we are told, Naomi Naomi knew there's that relative out there that's related to her husband by the name of Boaz. I got my eyes set on that guy. And therefore, the minute that Ruth comes home to Naomi and says, by the way, I met this guy named Boaz. Oh, that's when Naomi reacts in Pasuk Chaf and says, Hashem is doing chesed with us. Why? She says it. Karov lanu ha'ish megaleinu hu. That's our relative. He could be the goel. He could be the guy that saves us from the status we're in. And that's when she says, Pasuk Chaf bet, don't you dare leave his field. This is not about getting food. This is about Naomi getting Rus, and Rus may not even realize what Naomi is doing. She doesn't tell her. But this is kind of Naomi's way to get Rus to get their status back. And therefore, clearly, Naomi was hoping Boaz would get the hint at some point. Rus is in her field every single day. And at some point, he's going to propose to her. But you know what? He doesn't. So Naomi says, all right, I got to manipulate the situation a little bit more, which is when, of course, she tells Rus to dress up and go out to his field in the middle of the night. Everything is Naomi's idea, to the extent source number 20. But Tomer Aleha Kol Asher Tamri Alaya said, Ruth says to Naomi, anything you tell me to do, I will do. And that's exactly what happens. Vateret HaGoren Vatas Kichol Asher Sivta Chamota. She goes down to the Goren and she does everything her mother-in-law tells her. Ruth is just doing everything that she is instructed by Naomi. Ruth is wonderful, but everything that she is doing is just based on the direction of Naomi. Naomi is not a side character. Naomi is the one who is directing the show of what is going on in this story. So much to the extent that I would say the identity of Ruth is really very much associated with Naomi. In everyone's mind, she's not Ruth. Who is she? Source 21. Na'ara Moaviyahi Hashava im Naomi. Who's this girl? Everyone knows. This is the girl that came back with Naomi. Everybody associates her with the daughter-in-law of Naomi, the girl with Naomi. That's her identity right now. Until the end, she remains attached to Naomi. Why are people even nice to her, even a little bit? Boaz tells her, Pasuk Yedalef, I'm still in source 21, who God he gave me, Kol Asher Asitas Chamoteich, I heard what you did to your mother-in-law. I'm nice to you because you were nice to your mother-in-law. It's all about your mother-in-law. Not only that, when he gives her food, next Pasuk, Al Tavoy Rekama Chamoteich, don't you dare go home with nothing to give your mother-in-law, because everything is about the mother-in-law. Bring home the food to your mother-in-law. So therefore, it seems very clear to me as I'm reading through the Megillah, this story is so much so a story about Naomi. Naomi, who had to come back into Eretz Yisrael with Ruth because Ruth wouldn't leave her alone, and therefore now had to face her identity in a very new way, and uses Ruth in order to get her life back, in order to be back associated and connected back to the Jewish people. This story, in so many ways, as we said last week, but I want to now focus on our new Naomi character, is so parallel to the story of Yehuda and Tamar and Bereishis Lamecha in such an amazing way. So I believe very strongly that tribes are so connected to each other, meaning someone who comes from the tribe of Yehuda is going to have so much of Yehuda's characteristics, is going to have similar storylines to Yehuda from Bereishit, and so true for all the other Shvatim, which is actually the thesis of the book that I just came out with, Tribal Blueprints. But therefore, it is not a surprise to me that the Naomi story is going to remind us so much, as from the tribe of Yehuda, of the story of Yehuda in Bereishis Lamed Chet. Yehuda too leaves his family, source 22, by Yehuda Meitzech, Yaakov leaves his family for a period of time. And Rashi and Chazal look at it in a negative way. He leaves because of something bad that happened. He leaves as kind of being rejected from the family to some extent, possibly for Mechiras Yosef. But in some ways, he's kind of kicked out of the family, the way that Naomi and Elimelech kind of reject the Jewish people. And then there's a story of intermarriage to some extent. Source 23, Yehuda sees this woman, Bat Ish Kenani, a pshat is, she's the daughter of a Kenani man. Again, is he a merchant or is he, you know, actually from the nation of Canaan? But there's a woman that's from another nation that kind of gets involved in the story where his sons intermarry with Tamar. First, Er marries her, then Onan marries her, just like in our story, right? Naomi's sons marry these Moabite women. Then the sons die, just like in our story, right? Naomi's two sons die. So too in the Yehuda story, he loses his two sons. Psukim I gave you here, Zion, Chet, and Tet. They do Rabbe and Hashem. They do bad things, and therefore they are killed. Because of that, just like our story, there's a Yibum requirement where all of a sudden we have these two women, Tamar and Rus, who are kind of stuck where they're kind of connected to the family, and we need some way to redeem them. In both stories, source 24, as I gave you here, the right person won't do it because they're scared of something. They're scared of what will be if they marry this woman, because again, she's a foreigner. There's something negative about her attributed to her. Source 24, Yehuda doesn't want Shelah, his third son, to marry Tamar. Ki amar pen yamut gam hu kechav. Something's wrong with Tamar. Maybe he'll die. She's a jinx of some sort. And of course, in the Rus story, the Ploni Almoni doesn't want to marry Rus. Pen ashchis is nachlati. It'll ruin my reputation. It'll ruin my life. I can't marry her either. Both in our stories, again, Yehuda is paralleling our Naomi. They both lose their spouse. They lose their children. They have this kind of attached female that's kind of attached to them in some sort of way. And they've hit rock bottom. They're at their lowest point. But then that woman that's attached to them brings them back up to realize and to kind of go back and do tshuva for what they've done and return back to the people that they were before. In the story of Yehuda, he ends up, very strange, having relations with Tamar, not knowing it's her, ends up having two children from her, Peretz and Zerach, and ends up again coming back into the fold. And of course, Rus, who sticks with Naomi, ends up helping Naomi to come back and be part of the Jewish people and has a child in her name as well. If you look at Source 25, the connection between these two stories are so obvious in the Megillah. I pointed out starting from Pasuk Yuchet, but now I want to start from Pasuk Yudbet. When the Rus is marrying Boaz, there's a declaration that's being made by the nation. And they say to her, it's crazy, Vayi Beitcha Kibet Peretz, going back to the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Your house should be like the house of Peretz. Arsha Yolda Tamar LeYehuda. It's right there in the Megillah, like the child that was born in this weird relationship of Tamar and Yehuda. That is what we are comparing here to the story of Boaz and Rus getting married and having a child. And again, that child then at the end, Yulad Ben LeNaomi, the child being given to Naomi, Naomi being therefore associated to Ove, to Yishai, and then to David. And then the Pesukim do it again. Pasuk Yichet, Eilat told us Peretz, taking us back to the child born to Yehuda and Tamar, taking us down to Boaz, to Oved, and down to David. Clearly in that story, Yehuda is the main character. So I'd like to argue here, to some extent, Naomi is the main character here. Both of them try to run away from their past. Both of them kind of get stopped by a woman who did not want to be part of their lives. Yehuda did not want to be with Tamar. Tamar tricks him. Rus, I think Naomi didn't want her to come with, but Rus refuses to leave. But by them staying with Tamar and staying with Rus, their whole future unfolds in a much more positive way. They try to leave their past behind, but of course they both end up doing tshuva and coming back into the fold. It's a beautiful story of Yehuda. It's a beautiful story of Naomi. But if I want to argue this, I kind of want to take this one more step. And I was trying to think, is there another story that I could think of where we kind of think the main character is somebody, but then when we look even closer, it becomes revealed to us that maybe we made a mistake and the main character might really be somebody else. And I took a look again at Megillas Esther, because Megillas Esther is another very interesting one where, of course, just like in our Megillah, the main character is, of course, Rus is called Megillas Rus, right? And so to a Megillas Esther, the main character must be Esther because that's what the Megillah is named. But then I find so interesting again that the bookends are not about Esther. If you look at Source 26, when we start the Megillah, yeah, of course, we start with the focus on Ahasuerus, but when we get to our two good characters, we really start with Mordechai. Ish Yehudi, Hayah B'Shushan, Habirah, Shemo Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kishi, Shemini. And then after hearing about Mordechai, oh, by the way, yeah, there's this girl by the name of Hadassah who doesn't have any parents and therefore was adopted by Mordechai. But as the story continues, Mordechai is the one who's really quite highlighted. If you look at source 27, right, the bad part of the story is when the king takes his ring and gives it to Haman, and therefore what's the climax of the story? When the opposite happens, but it doesn't happen to Esther, it happens to Mordechai. If you look at Esther Perichet, this the day that of our victory, Mordechai ba lifnei hamelech ki gidestar mahula. Mordechai comes before the king. Vayasah hamelech es habato asher havir me Haman. He takes off the ring that he took away from Haman. Vayitznah le Mordechai, and he gives it to Mordechai. O Mordechai yatzam lifnei hamelech b'levush hamalchus, and Mordechai is the one with all the dressed and all the royalty. The focus is on Mordechai. The very ending of Megillas Esther, source 28. Ki Mordechai hayudi mishne lamelech achashverosh v'gadol layudim ratzu larov v'chav darish tov lamo v'dover shalom chol zaro. Mordechai is the second to king and goes out to the Jewish people and is always seeking out good for the Jewish people. The beginning is Mordechai. The end is Mordechai. And even in the middle, there is a large, large focus on Mordechai. And therefore, what I want to show you is, I think to some extent, the Rus of our story is very parallel to the Esther of the Megillah, and the Naomi in our story is very parallel to the Mordechai of the Megillah as well. You see, if I look at the personality of Esther, it reminds me in so many ways of Rus. What I just said about Rus, what would be the characteristic I would give her after our analysis? She's very obedient. She does really what she is told. If you look at source 29 again, she says to her mother-in-law, anything that you tell me, I will do. She does kichol asher. She does everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Well, that's a theme of Esther. That would be the same personality trait I would give to Esther as well. Source number 30. Ki Mordechai tziva l'Esther lo tagid. Why does she not tell her identity? Why does she not say where she's from? Mordechai told her not to say anything. And then it says it a second time. Kasher tziva leha Mordechai v'tmamar Mordechai Esther osa kasher hayta b'amnaito. She listened to Mordechai when she was living in the palace like she listened to him when she was living with him. She listened to Mordechai to such an extent that she doesn't take credit for anything. When she tells the king about Bigtan and Teresh, source 31, Vayvadaha davar leMordechai, Mordechai found out about it. She says it b'shem Mordechai. And of course, when she goes to save the Jewish people, source 32, it's because Mordechai says to her, come on, it's the time to do something. And therefore Mordechai acts. She is very obedient to Mordechai. They also, Rus and Esther, have similar personalities of matzachin. People just like them. They're very likable people. Source 33, we have Rus saying, I'm sachin bein. Now, I want to find favor in your eyes. And we see that Boaz certainly picks her out of the crowd. There's something about her that made people catch her attention. Source 34, but Esther, the same thing. Everywhere she went, Vati Esther nosi chen b'nei koreha. Everybody liked her when they saw her. Vati sachen l'chesed l'fana mikol b'sula. She was nicer to the king than everyone else. There was something about them that kind of got people to give them attention. And therefore, in both stories, they're both able to seduce a man into doing what they want. Ruth is able to get Boaz to agree to marry her, and Esther is obviously able to get Achashverosh first to marry her, but even if that's not what she wanted, she gets Achashverosh to kill Haman and save the Jews. Jewish people. Both Rus and Esther have this pivotal moment where they sacrifice themselves for the greater good. And to me, that's obviously why we look at them as heroines, not just because they're sweet and they're kind and they listen to directions, but because they sacrifice themselves to do something amazing for others. Rus' declaration, I'm going to leave my people, my cozy life behind, and join the Jewish people and sacrifice everything for the sake of my mother-in-law. That was an incredible, incredible moment in Megillas Rus. And Esther, of course, her decision to risk her life and save the Jewish people is her shining moment in the Megillah. But if I ask you, what is the ending of Rus? What is the ending of the life of Rus herself, not the Megillah? What's the ending of Esther? Guess what? They both don't have an ending. The Megillahs don't provide us with an ending of either of their stories. I have no idea what happens to Rus from this point on, and I have no idea what happens to Esther. I could say it's a happy ending. I could say Rus is married to this very rich, nice man, Boaz, and she has lots and lots more children, and she becomes accepted to be part of Am Yisrael and has a wonderful life. Maybe. I could say Esther's married to the most powerful man. I mean, he is the king and he's wealthy and he's wonderful. Maybe he's very kind to her at the end and she single-handedly saved the Jewish people. Maybe her life is wonderful. But it's also possible that maybe they both had a very not happy ending to their story, which is not recorded in the text. If you look through the eyes of Chazal, they actually give them a pretty negative ending. If you go back to the story of Rus, right? The story of Rus ends, she hands over the baby to Naomi. She has a child by Boaz. I have no idea what happens to her from there on in. Comes along Chazal to tell me, based on a pasuk in source 35, that when Boaz says to her, wow, you're amazing, labilti lechad acharei b'churim, you didn't go after the young boys, that therefore we learn out from here that he was pretty old, and he was much older than her. Both the Yalkut HaMechiri and the Medrash Tanchuma both age him at 80 years old. He's 80 when she marries him. And not only that, the Medrash Rus Rabba writes, oto halayla shabala hamate. He dies that night. So the ending of her story is her husband dies. She has no husband at the end of the story. Not only that, if we look at the pasuk once again, the child is handed over to Naomi. Yulad ben leNaomi. Not only that, it sounds like from the pasukim that she is the one who nurses the child. It's a little unusual, but meaning Rus is completely replaced as the mom. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to make that the whole story. If you look at the Gemara wants to know the following concept. Where do we learn? If you raise an orphan in your home, it's as if you have raised that child. Raising a child as if it is your child. Where do we learn it from? And we learn it now from the story of Rus. Mehacha. But yulad ben lanami. What does it mean? Naomi had a child. Did Naomi give birth to this child? Follow Rus yalda. No, Rus gave birth to a child. Ella. Rus yalda v'Naomi gidla. Naomi is the one who raised the child, which is why the child is basically as if it is hers, which means, according to Chazal, her husband dies, and then she doesn't even get to keep the child. So what a sad ending to the story of Rus herself. Esther also, it could be a very sad ending. What's the ending of the story? She saves the Jewish people, but now she's stuck, married to Ahasuerus. Who's Ahasuerus? Source 37. Vatilakach Esther, Vatilakach Esther. She's taken. She is raped by this guy. She does not want to be married to this king, reminding me of the psukim by Sarah, by Dina, Vatukach, Vayukachota. But Sarah and Dina, they escape. Even if they are taken by Paro or taken by Avimelech, Dina, taken by Shechem, they are released at the end. They get to go home. They get to go back to their lives. Esther is stuck married to Ahasuerus. There's no happy ending for Esther. If you look at the Malbim, source 38, Esther, she lekucha shelo bertzona. She did not want to be married to this guy. This is not a nice guy to be married to. He gets drunk. He killed his first wife. She fears him, right? Only if he puts out the scepter am I allowed to talk to him. She talks to him by begging him. There's not an equal relationship in any way. This doesn't seem to be a very happy ending for Esther. But Chazal make it even worse for her. If you look at source 39, the Gemara Megillah talks about the fact that it's possible to argue that she was actually married originally to Mordechai. Al tekre labat el labayit. When it says she was labayit, right? Meaning when it says she was labat, she was like a daughter to him. Don't read it that way. It says the Gemara, she was married to him, labayit. She was his wife. And then it talks very strange, and I'm not saying this is allowed in any way, lahalacha. Shaita omedet mecheiko shal Achashverosh v'tovelo v'yoshevet becheiko shal Mordechai. She would lie with Achashverosh, go to the mikvah, and go back to Mordechai. Not appropriate. But anyway, source number 40, at one point in the story when Mordechai says, go to the king and say to the king and help the Jewish people, that's when she uses these words, okay, that's it. I'm going to go to the king. Shalok adat. I'm going to go to the king voluntarily because you're avanity. If I'm going to be lost, I'm going to be lost, which can mean I could die today or my life could be over today. And that's how the Gemara takes it. When I go to the king now, shalok adat haya, shabachol yom v'yon ha'achshav be'ones, until now I've been forced. I'm going to him willingly. I'm going to be lost from my father's home. I'm going to be lost from you, Mordechai. I'm going to be lost. I'm going to be completely lost. And that's the end of the Esther story. Avadati, avadati. She's married to the king, and we don't hear the ending of her story. Maybe it was a good ending. Maybe it was a bad ending. The Megillah doesn't tell us the ending of their story. So maybe now we can take a step back, and I could say as follows. Now that I'm looking at two Megillahs now, Megillahs Esther and Megillahs Rus, maybe I could learn that, yes, there's a side character and a main character, or maybe I could say in these stories, there are actually two different types of main characters. There's two types. There's the Mordechai and the Naomi type, And there's, of course, the Russ and the Esther type. There's the one who is behind the scenes, who's manipulating all the events. We hear about them in the beginning. We hear about them at the end. We see a transformation. We have the Mordechai. We have the Mordechai who causes, to some extent, the hatred of Haman by not bowing down to him, causing the decree against the Jewish people, who mourns, who cries, who leads the Jewish people, who tells Esther she has to do something, she has to stand up and act. And of course, at the end, becomes a major leader, helps save the Jewish people, and becomes second to king. That's the story of Mordechai, beginning to the end. We have the Naomi, who leaves Israel with her family, loses everything, then returns back to Israel and all the people that she left behind, who then manipulates behind the scene, telling Ruth what to do in order to get themselves back accepted amongst the Jewish people. And of course, at the end, gets back her lineage, gets back her land, gets a child, and becomes the great-great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech. That's one set of main character. But then there's another set. There's the player in the middle. There's the one who's there the whole time, who's listening to the mentor, listening to the instructor. But it's not just that they're listening. They're choosing to listen. They could choose also not to listen. They are displaying tremendous belief and sacrifice and strength by listening to the instruction that they are given. They certainly have a choice. Esther makes a decision to go to the king. She makes that decision when she says those words I just read you, and it's again here in Source 40. Ubachein evo al hamelech asher lo kedad asher avadi avadi. I choose that this is what I'm going to do. She then chooses to go to the king the second time, Source 40. But Tosef, Esther, she begs him, after she already got the king to agree to overturn the decree and let the Jewish people fight their enemies, again for the people of Shushan to fight their enemies. She chooses this time to go to the king over and over again and dedicate her life for the Jewish people. Ruth also makes that decision. Source 42, famous words, Ki el asher talchi elech basher talinu alin, where you go, I go, where you sleep, I'll sleep, amecha mi velokayach elokai, your nation's my nation, your God is my God, where you die, I die, I will be buried, nothing will separate between the two of us. She accepted her fate. She is the one who said, I will take food off of the floor. She accepted everything that went her way. She, of course, agreed to go to the tent of Boaz and agreed to marry him in the story as well. I think, therefore, since we have two very different types of main characters, we have two very, very different lessons to take away from these main characters. From the Rus and from the Esther, you learn about sacrifice. You learn that sometimes life is not easy and sometimes life is really, really hard. And sometimes the results are what you want and sometimes the results are not. And therefore, that's why the ending of their story is left out of the Megillah. Because whether they got a happy ending or a sad ending, it's not the point. Their story is that of sacrifice and that of doing something that is tremendous of what they believe in. And it doesn't matter what the result is, because sometimes the result might be good and sometimes the result might be bad, but that's not the point. The point is you have to do what you believe in. So maybe Ruth married, is now married to a rich man, is happy and has more children. Maybe Esther is thrilled being married to the king of Persia. Or maybe no. Maybe Ruth married an old man. Maybe he died. She gave up her child and had a miserable life. And maybe Esther is married to a drunken king and has a miserable life. But their lesson is not their ending. Their lesson is you need to, when you believe in something and you want to fight for a cause, you have to accept the consequences that come your way from the result of what you have done. And that's the beautiful message of Esther and Ruth, because they knew that the ending of their story may not be so great. But for the bigger picture of what was important, they were willing to make that sacrifice. But on the other hand, we have two other main characters, and that's the Naomi and the Mordechai. And I want to focus on our Naomi, because Naomi is a very different type of main character. She's the manipulator in the entire story. But if I go to my beginning question and move it to understand now everything about Naomi, originally, she wanted to run away. She wanted to be able to go back into Eretz Yisrael, pretend nothing happened, slide herself right back into her old life, and move on as if nothing occurred. But because Ruth comes along with her, she has to face her past, and she has to fix her mistakes, and she has to work her way back into the Jewish people, find her way to believe in God once again, and see the chesed of God and the good that God has given her. And that is the story of Naomi. And I think the story of Naomi teaches us something really, really strong, which is no matter what we've done in our lives, and no matter who we are, we can stop, we can face our past, and we can move forward with who we want to be in the future. And on that, I think it's a very strong message for us right now. We are spending a lot of time at home. We are living in the abnormal. We have so much, to some extent, space and time to think and reflect about what our life was before we all got quarantined into our home. We can contemplate who's the person we really want to be. What is the path we really want to be on? And then we can make that change, because life, hopefully soon, will start over again, where we will be able to come back outside. We'll be able to go back into a somewhat new normal type of life that we will now live after all of this. And you know what Naomi teaches us? Take the break, take the time, take the opportunity that we're given to figure out what path we want to be on right now. And therefore, when we all come back to life in the new normal of what will come, we will all return to the lives, to our lives, as better people, the way Naomi does at the end of the story. Thank you very, very much, everyone, for joining us tonight. And I hope I see you next week when we will discuss Orpah. We're going to do Vashti at the same time to finish out our series. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great night.